This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back, Tom Hartman here with you, and Tom Perez is on the line with us. He is the chair of the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, former U.S. Secretary of Labor. The DNC's website, democrats.org. You can tweet him at Tom Perez, P-E-R-E-Z. Secretary Perez, welcome back.
Tom, it's great to be with you and your listeners. Always a pleasure.
Or I don't know, should I call you Chairman Perez? I'm not sure which is the...
Tom is the quickest.
Tom, okay.
Easiest, okay? Because you know the name Tom, so the two Toms can talk.
So congratulations. You guys kicked ass in Alabama last night. It is an impressive victory. And I think the most impressive part of it is I know that the Democratic Party, from what I've been reading around the edges, that the Democratic Party played a role in this race, and yet there was such a kind of pseudo xenophobia. I don't know how what the word is on a state by state basis, but down in Alabama, the whole idea of people from out of state coming in was not all that welcome. Notwithstanding Steve Bannon coming in from Harvard and Goldman Sachs and whatnot, you guys did a great job, and you did it largely under the radar.
Well, it was a key to be under the radar. I've known Doug for 20 years, and I've tried a lot of cases in Alabama as a civil rights lawyer. And the first thing the defense attorneys did when I'd come in is say, that guy from Washington's trying to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
So I was acutely aware of the need to, number one, fly below the radar screen, respect and understand and work with not only Doug's team, but local faith leaders, local elected officials, people on the ground who really knew their communities well. And we were below the radar screen, and make no mistake about it, we were very, very active below the radar screen, and we were engaged before the Republican primary was over, because we knew that we didn't have a day to waste. And I started speaking to Doug early in 2017, because he's the real deal for your listeners. This guy is what you see. He is someone whose North Star is just helping people. It's making sure that you improve people's lives. He's the son of a steelworker. He's someone who believes that we should be working to make sure that everyone in every zip code can feed their family and work in a job with dignity and get health care. And he believes that we must make sure our criminal justice system is fair. And his work in civil rights is unparalleled, and so I was excited. We invested almost $1 million, and virtually all of it went into African American outreach and millennial outreach. And it's amazing. Doug Jones outperformed Barack Obama.
Yeah,
that's a remarkable statistic. And I never would have thought that you'd have a higher percentage of voters that we're able to turn out for Doug Jones versus Barack Obama. We dreamed of that, but that was that was the reality.
Yeah.
And he did it. And African American women, once again, the pillar of the Democratic Party, came through.
98%.
Yeah. Of African American women, 93% of African American men. We were hoping that maybe 28% of the electorate would be African American. That we thought would give us a shot. And we ended up at 30%. And
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, if I may, on the other side of it, 72% of white men voted for Roy Moore, 63% of white women. This, whereas 93 and 98% of black men and women respectively voted for Doug Jones, this is a racial bifurcation in Alabama. I realize that sort of thing is probably more pronounced in the old Confederate states. But what does that tell us about the state of American politics, and how does the Democratic Party strategize around that in the context of trying to build a more multi-ethnic, multiracial, nation, as opposed to a more polarized one?
Well, Doug actually won women by 16%, and he did spectacularly among millennials. He won by about 20 points.
Hmm.
And I think the distinctions you see among women, there's obviously African American women of color, were virtually all for Doug Jones.
Right.
White women with more than a high school degree, Doug Jones did very, very well with. Mm. And white women with a high school degree or less, he didn't do so well with. But when you add it all up, It got him across the finish line.
Yeah.
And what was very impressive, Tom, is not only the African American turnout, but the fact that he was able to compete in those other counties. The key to success in Alabama for any Democrat seeking to prevail is obviously you've got to run up the score in your base areas, which is basically Birmingham and Huntsville and Mobile and Montgomery, and then the so-called Black Belt, which is named after the soil in that area. But then you've got to, there's 67 counties in Alabama, and you've got to at least hold your own in those other counties. And Doug was able to not only hold his own, he actually flipped 10 of the 67 counties from red to blue. And let me give you one example, because it really shows you how Democrats can win anywhere as long as we organize. There's one small county, Lee County, and if your listeners are wondering, yes, it is named after Robert E. Donald Trump won that county by 24 points a year ago. Mm. Doug won it by 17 points.
Whoa!
A 41-point swing. No Democratic presidential candidate has won more than 45% of the vote in that county since the signing of the Civil Rights Act. I'm talking about the 60s.
Wow.
So, Doug, we helped him in this. We were organizing everywhere. We were on college campuses. We had a church program because we knew that we needed to work with faith communities to get out the vote, and we needed to go into these counties where, frankly, Democrats got clobbered in the past, and tell what we stand for. And the thing about it is, Alabamians, they want access to health care, not just in the blue counties, but they understand that if they have a loved one struggling with opioid addiction, the Republican plan to take their health care away is going to be really destructive. That's how we won Virginia. We talked about the issues, and the number one issue in Virginia was health care.
Yeah.
So when we lead with our values and when we organize and organize early and organize everywhere, and when we did what Doug did in Alabama, this wasn't about right versus left. This was about right versus wrong. Doug's been fighting for all the right things throughout his career, and the notion that Roy Moore, who all he wanted to do was fight the culture wars. Doug wants to fight for good jobs and health care and all those things, the kitchen table issues. Voters saw that, and that's how he was able to succeed. And we've seen this elsewhere across the country. We've been able to win special elections in Oklahoma and Iowa and other places that were beat red country for Donald Trump. And that's what gives me optimism, Tom. And the new DNC, as I told you in one of our prior get-togethers, we're organizing everywhere. And I couldn't say that we're going to have a every zip code count strategy and then not invest heavily in Alabama. That's why I was proud to do it. This one, quite frankly, was a bit personal for me because I just know Doug. I know what a man of character he is and what a spectacular senator he will be, and that's why we fought for it. And that's what the new DNC is doing. Sometimes we're conspicuous, and sometimes we're less conspicuous, and it's all about what the situation calls for. But everywhere we're going to be active.
Yeah, it is. And Larry Cohen was on a couple days ago telling us about the new Unity Commission that he's a member of, and the recommendations coming back. I'm very encouraged about the future of the DNC, and this is just a marvelous and positive thing. Tom Perez, the chair of the Democratic Party and former U.S. Secretary of Labor.
Thank you so much,
Tom. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you. And Larry Cohen is a gem, by the way.
Yeah.
One of the best trade unionists in the country and a remarkably wonderful leader at the DNC.
I agree.
Spectacular work.
He is, and a dear friend. Tom Perez, thanks so much, Tom. Great having you with us, Secretary. Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. And welcome back. Tim in Misek, Michigan. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Oop. Sometimes people try to answer their phone and they end up hanging it up by accident. Tim, give us a call back and we will pick that up. Let's see here, Ed in Greenville, Texas. Hey, Ed, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Hello, Tom. Yes, I was just talking to your interviewer there. I'm an ex-jock, so I guess maybe I don't know if this is apropos or not, but I was just thinking this tax bill that or tax scam that they're proposing, the deal about the graduate students having to start paying taxes on their tuition. It seems to me that, and I'm speaking, like I say, from an ex-jock, it seems to me that football scholarships would fall under this same purview. Maybe if enough folks, especially those Alabama football fans, might get a little upset if they all of a sudden couldn't recruit anybody.
Yeah, I think that I suspect not. I think you're making a really good point, Ed, and it's a really great leap of logic. And in a logical, rational world, I think you'd be absolutely right. But I think by calling the athletic scholarships, just like academic scholarships, nobody's talking about, you know, adding a tax bill to people who have academic scholarships. Basically, what graduate students do is they work, they teach principally,
right,
in exchange for, you know, free tuition, you know, while they're working on their master's degree, they're teaching undergrads, you know, college freshmen and sophomores and whatnot. And because they're, quote, working, because they're teaching, that's why the Republicans are saying, therefore, we need to take taxes out of their non-pay. We need to make them pay taxes on that.
Yeah, I understand that, but tell you what, if you ask anybody who ever played the game of football, tell me that's not work.
Yeah, no, I understand. I completely agree with you. I just suspect, you know, for the reasons that you're talking about, they don't want to you know, tip over the apple cart with regard to college sports because it's such a big deal out there. So
and not only that, but the work that these athletes put out profits the universities quite a bit.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother debate. At some point, I'm waiting for college athletes. You know, actually, I think it has to do with how the rules are set up. And I don't know if that's the NCAA or if it's some other agency or if that there's even federal rules about it. I'm not an ex-jock, so I don't know. But when, you know, when are college athletes going to start getting some of the rewards?
Exactly. Really. Yeah.
It's
kind of a sad thing too that unfortunately there's so many guys playing football that never get their degree either. That's that to me is a travesty. I think they ought to do something to ensure that these guys will get their degree. A lot of them do, but I mean, and also a lot of them don't.
Yeah. Although the ones who don't they typically tend to go out of, you know, just like leave in their sophomore year and go right into the major leagues?
Well, yes, but then like you say, an athlete's career is how long? 7-8 years at most. Then what do you do?
Yeah. Well, you make as much money as you can, I guess, over the short term, but not everybody can do that.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, not everybody can do that.
It's just something that occurred to me. I was in there listening to some of the deals that this rotten scam is.
Yeah.
What holds. And you know, I'm retired now, and I'm half my income is Social Security.
Oh, well, they want to take a whack out of that too, Ed. So
you betcha.
They're coming for us 16 ways to Sunday. Ed, we're out of time here, but thank you for the call. Very, very, very thoughtful and, you know, yeah, brilliant. Thank you. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, boy, what a fascinating day. Let's just kind of decompress here and discuss the issues of the day and the Democratic Party and what happened in Alabama and whatnot. Pick up some of your calls. Richard in Chicago, you wanted to talk about the DNC and their party messaging?
Yeah, hi.
Hey, Richard.
Hi. Gosh, you surprised me. I wanted to talk to those two guys because, you know, we won by 1%, and I know that in some certain districts, there was a big swing, the 37%, as they were talking about. But we won against a person who I am not going to say is alleged, but a person who shouldn't be within 1,000 feet of a school.
Right.
And we won by 1%. Also, we're with Trump, as outrageous as he is, he still seems to control the narrative. And the Democrats are constantly playing catch-up. And I wanted to say to these two guys, I don't want to hear any more complaints that we have our press conferences, blah, 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 and we don't get our message out. They have watched the Republican Party for 30 years to grab the narrative of this country, and it's about time they figured out how the Republicans did it, and it's about time they figured out how to counter it.
Yeah, well, the principal way the Republicans are doing it right now is by being outrageous. And you know, yes, it captures the news cycle. And yes, arguably, it even got Donald Trump elected. In fact, we saw the exact same kind of media malpractice in this election, the special election in Alabama, as we saw in the general election in 2016, where the media gave about twice as much free publicity to Donald Trump. Yes, a lot of it was, quote, negative. But still, every time you repeat somebody's name, that builds brand awareness. The media gave about twice as much free publicity to Donald Trump as they did to Hillary Clinton. I would say in Alabama, they gave 5, 6, 8, 10 times as much publicity to Roy Moore, right down to his lousy horseback riding. Then they did. I mean, I didn't see, you know, Doug Jones driving up to vote. But, you know, Roy Moore shows up on a horse, even though he's got his reins wrong and he's got his stirrups wrong. I mean, the guy obviously doesn't know how to ride a horse, but it's like that's what's going on. And so, you know, I understand your point, Richard. But, you know, this is the media reality that we live in right now. Bob in Pennsylvania. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I have some information that I'd like to share relative to the question about Puerto Rico.
Right.
And in particular, there is a place to send some material, and there's also a place to send some money. A lot of places to send money. But we have a home there, and my son lives there with his wife. They chose to live there as residents. And there's a real difficult problem on the western end of Puerto Rico and in the central mountains where very little assistance from any government agency is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so the generation of electricity is about 60 to 65%, but it's not being transmitted throughout the island. As a matter of fact, the wires are still down in most of the mountain areas and on the west coast, certainly where I live. So it's not getting to the homes. And so what I wanted to do was suggest there is a place in a small town on the West End that is located at an American Legion post where that gentleman could send his generator if he was so inclined. And mm-hmm. I have that address if you want it. And there's also a way to send money that will be targeted directly into the Central Mountains and on the West Coast, basically to the equivalent of what we would know here in the States as a community foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that address, and I wonder how I can be sure that this man gets the information.
Yeah, if these are addresses, the problem with giving an address on the radio is that people don't sit around with a pen in their hand. And in fact, you know, on the radio, probably about half people listening are driving. So probably the best thing to do would be to go to our daily blog on the homepage at TomHartman.com and just post that information there. The other thing I would add, you know, I did international relief work for 30 years and all over the world. And one of the things that, you know, people think that, oh, gee, you know, there's famine going on someplace, so I'll mail some food, or there's, you know, refugees, so I'll mail some clothing, or there's not electricity, so I'll ship a generator. The reality is that by the time you ship that stuff, you have burned through probably 20, 30, 40% of the value of the stuff that you're shipping just in the shipping charges. And you're using precious resources that are needed for shipping things like medicine and food and water. So it's better to send money, frankly.
Yeah, and I have a great place for them to send money, which we'll focus on, and I will post it. It's the equivalent, as I said, of a community foundation.
Okay. The other thing you could do, Bob, is just give the name of the organization, and people can plug it into a search engine and find it fairly easy. What is that name?
Okay, I'll give you the location. It's www.fasinfatherc.pr.org/that's far enough.
Yeah.
And then there are a couple different places you can put money. This thing is called Recovery Now Fund, and it's for the Central Mountains and the West Coast that are not being serviced by government people.
Great. Bob, thanks for that information. That's good
Very
information.
Good.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And let's see here. Ed in Birmingham, Alabama. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today? Oh, we're hitting the break? Okay, hang on just a second. Ed, let me put you on hold. I'm sorry I missed the time, or I wasn't paying attention to my own time cues. I've got it right in front of me. My apologies. We will be back with more of your calls. We're coming up on 28 minutes past the hour, hitting the typically a news break here at the bottom of the hour. After that, we'll be picking up more of your calls. And, of course, Talk Media News will be with us a little later on. Craig Aaron from Free Press will be with us in the next hour. A lot going on in the news today. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with more of the news of the day. Rod Rosenstein, or Stein, I believe, testifying before Congress. We'll fill you in right after the break. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And as far as I can tell, there has been no real news coming out of Rod Rosenstein's testimony before Congress this morning. You know, everybody trying to make their little partisan points and use the Department of Justice as their whipping boy. But it ain't happening, as far as I can tell. Just in the 5-minute scan here I did of about 10, 12 news sites during the last 5-minute break. And what I've been monitoring on the monitors here in the studio with, I think we've got CNN on right now. Doesn't seem like much is going on there. If I miss something, feel free to let me know. James in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, thank you, James.
I had a question for Congressman Pocan regarding net neutrality.
I'm sorry he's not here anymore, but maybe I can help.
Sure. I'm looking for advice on how we locally could influence, I believe it's called Title II.
Yes.
If that goes into effect.
No, it's the other way around. Title II of the Telecommunications Act is what regulates telephone companies, and it basically says that you can't listen in on somebody's conversation and charge them different prices depending on who they're talking to or what they're talking about. And which is exactly what net neutrality is, right? That your internet service provider can't listen in on the internet activity you're engaging in and speed it up, slow it down, or block it, or charge you different prices. And so what Tom Wheeler did 2 years ago, or maybe 3 years ago at the FCC, was he put the ISPs under Title II along with the phone companies and said, you guys are common carriers. You're going to be regulated this way. Which mandates net neutrality. What Ajit Pai is fixing to do tomorrow, from all indications, is take net neutrality out of Title II and instead come up with a whole bunch of rules and regulations that the FCC says that they're going to enforce to regulate the internet, as it were. And, this is not a good thing. Anyhow, back to you. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I guess my question would be, is it possible for us as citizens of our own cities to go to our public utility commissions and require that they charge all these telecom companies additional fees for, per telephone pole, a charge that could possibly be used to somehow come back to the citizens to pay for to neutralize their effect,
yeah.
In effect, I guess. I don't know if that's a possibility, something that we can do.
Well, I think the best thing is for, you know, all over the country is for communities to do what Chattanooga did. You know, they just built out a high-speed fiber broadband infrastructure throughout the city, and the city runs it. And so people in Chattanooga are getting, you know, 100 MIPS up and down, and they're getting it for, you know, a third of the price of pretty much anybody else in the country. Because there's not a big, giant, profitable, multi-billion-dollar corporation sucking money off the top. Instead, it's a direct tie right into the backbone of the internet. We need to be doing that all over the country.
Is it possible for us to affect our utility commissions?
I don't think so, but I could be wrong on this. I'm pretty sure, though, that if it could be done through PUCs, through public utility commissions, around the country, which, you know, regulate utilities, arguably putting the internet under Title II does designate it as a utility. I just don't know if it gives the legal authority. I would think if it did, that you'd have, you know, dozens of states and possibly even county utility commissions that would be jumping on that. So I'm guessing that that's not a viable option. But, you know, you've put a good idea in my brain here, and let me see what I can find out about it. Okay, James?
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. George in Chicago. Hey, George, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Well, Tom, I'd like to relate to you that it was announced today in Chicago that a federal judge has imposed additional lifelong sanctions on the disgraced former Republican Speaker of the House, Benny Hastert. For the rest of his life, he cannot be in the presence of anybody under 18 unless other adults are present.
Right. He's a convicted sex offender.
Right. And he has to submit the constant monitoring of his telephone and Internet usage.
He's so all this presumably means he just got out of jail?
I believe he's still on parole.
Uh-huh.
But he's essentially in a house arrest situation with limited movement.
Yeah.
But he cannot go to any sex-oriented or themed websites or phone numbers.
Right.
Now, how does this connect with what happened in Alabama yesterday? Victims of pedophilia, pedophiles like Hastert and Moore, are full of shame and full of fear, especially if that pedophilia is combined with power, the kind of power a speaker has, the kind of power that a veteran Army officer, Green Beret prosecutor has in a local community, in a county. And as this man moved up the political ladder in the state of Alabama, he gained more power and more of a reputation and more popularity, which drove the women he victimized deeper into the shadows. And what I'm saying is that the kind of terror that they must have felt inside themselves and carried with themselves all these years, and then finally had to step up and say, this man must be exposed. Those nine women are true American heroes, and all 330 million of us owe them a debt of gratitude that we can only repay by supporting them and working hard to make sure that we have a better society that behaves better, and that women who were victimized and children are believed when they say that something horrible happened to them.
Yeah.
My hat's off to them, and I admire them more than I can say.
I totally agree with your sentiment. Very, very eloquently and well said, George. Thank you. Michael, in Bossier City, Louisiana, listening on SiriusXM. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Not too bad. I've heard it mangled worse than that. Bossier City, Louisiana.
Bossier. Okay. Thank you.
Even mangled one time. What I want to say is I'm traveling, and if you lose me, cut me off.
Okay.
I listened to the guy during Pocan's visit crowing about the win in Alabama, but as Ms. Perez said, we won that because we were right versus wrong. The self-righteous wing of the Republican Party put a candidate up that just should never have been there. I mean, even in our worst dreams should never have been there. That's why we won.
Agreed. Agreed.
And I just want to point that out. Both Mr. Perez and Mr. Pocan got to that fact at some point. I just wanted to emphasize it from out here that we did not flip Alabama. It's a temporary measure at best, and they've already started claiming that he's a lame duck. At least the propaganda channel has stated that. So
yeah,
we may
Fox
as well
News,
get
yeah.
ready to fight the fight again.
Oh, I, you know, you're very well said, Michael. And in fact, if Luther Strange had been running, he probably would have won by 15 points, you know, or at least 10 points. I think that's probably the margin between, the horrors of what Roy Moore was accused of and what, you know, how Republicans would otherwise be voting, given how corrupt the Trump administration is, the whole Republican Party right now. But your point is really well taken. And this is the point that I made to, I forget whether it was Congressman Pocan or Chairman Perez, when I said we can't always rely on the Republican Party to put up people with the kind of baggage Roy Moore has. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, however, you now have, for the next 6 years, a United States Senator, Doug Jones, a Democrat, who has an opportunity to prove to the people of Alabama that he can represent their best interests and that he can do so in a positive and effective manner. And if he pursues a progressive path, and Bernie Sanders, for example, did really, really well in a lot of red states. He won West Virginia by 21 points. He won a lot. You know, he was drawing 20,000 people down in Mississippi, you know, to his rallies and things. I think that there is a longing in America, you know, left, right, and in between for people who are honest and who are genuinely doing the people's work. And I believe that Doug Jones has the potential to be that, and we're going to have to see what kind of senator he can be. And that, you know, but that's, you know, step one, as it were. Barbara in Bridgeville, Delaware. Hey, Barbara, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good.
I have a question. You had Tom Perez on not long ago, and he's been on your show before, and it kind of annoys me because you've kind of given him a platform about how wonderful the Democratic Party is, but the Democratic Party for the last 30 years has embraced corporate money just like the Republicans have. And so, to me, both parties don't represent the people, and that's part of the problem here.
Okay. I would not disagree about that,
like what they did with Bernie, and they kind of pushed him to the side, and... Right. Tom Perez, under his leadership, recently purged a few progressives from some key committees, and a lot of progressives came back. And so I just don't see.
Barbara, I hear what you're saying. Forgive my interrupting you. I've got 20 seconds, but I understand what you're saying. On the one hand, yes, the whole DLC thing that Al Fromm and Bill Clinton did back in 1989. That led to Bill Clinton's 1992 victory was to reinvent the Democratic Party via the Democratic Leadership Committee to bring in money from big banks and big insurance companies, what they considered clean money, high-tech money. It's blown up in their faces. It has hurt the Democratic Party over the last 20 years or so, and the Democratic Party's turning away from that. I am not willing to reject the Democratic Party out of hand like apparently you are. Just because they're starting to acknowledge the fact that that was the wrong road to go down and they're recalibrating and fixing it. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a healthy process. I realize I get, and I'm assuming that you're actually a Democrat who actually cares and you believe what you're saying, because I know that, the Republican trolls that we get calling in who claim that they're Democrats, that's always their complaint. Oh, they're just the same as the Republicans. They're not the same.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And Tom Perez is doing a very good job. And he is bringing in progressives like Larry Cohen and others and giving them a platform. And welcome back. Adam in New Orleans watching us on YouTube. Hey, Adam, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
I'm trying to time my way out of investments. I'm as investing as aggressively as I possibly can, expecting profits to soar after this tax debacle. And looking back at most of the downturns that have happened historically, the Great Depression, what happened in 87, 2008, all of these events seem to happen third quarter. Two of them happened in October. Is there a cycle going on here? Is this something that sets up and is a reasonable way to think about, hey, get out of these kinds of long positions? I mean, These guys are throwing the monkey wrench from hell into the economy, literally sucking money away from people who spent. So... as you've said in the past, a depression is coming. So I'm trying to figure out, okay, can I ride this wave and when to get off this wave?
Right. Well, I got the Aiden Forecast newsletter yesterday that Louise and I have subscribed to for probably close to 20 years. And when we follow their advice, we do well. I've not been following their advice in the last year because I thought they were way too optimistic about the stock market, and I was completely wrong, and they were totally right. And I'm out of the market right now, have been for a year. And in their newsletter yesterday, they published a couple of charts showing that the last two bull markets, not the last two, but two of the last two or three bull markets out of the last 30 or 40 or 50 years, something like that, actually lasted a couple years longer than this bull market has lasted. And they're suggesting that absent black swan events, absent a war in North Korea, absent something being done really crazy or stupid out of Washington, D.C., they're fully expecting the bull market to continue for as much as another year or two. And in fact, they were suggesting, pick up some positions, like just buy the Dow, for example. Louise and I are still debating what to do about our investments, but we're not big investors anyway. I mean, our most of our money has always just been in the houses that we have. It's how most middle class people build their wealth. So I don't know how to advise you, Adam. The people I respect, I've not been following their advice. They've been right, I've been wrong. On the other hand, they're also the Aiden sisters are also saying, you know, be careful, be ready. And so I guess the thing to do would be to put trailing stops on anything you've got, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah, or play, you know, some portion of it in puts just in case.
Yeah, but, well, or yeah, if you're going to do puts, I mean, you know, it's just as easy to buy VXX or VXZ or SDS. I mean, these are all bets against the market. And I've got a little bit of all three of those just on the assumption that if the, you know, and by a little bit, I'm talking about like, you know, $2,000 worth, just because it's amazing how much they go up. I mean, you know, a couple thousand dollars in VXX becomes, you know, tens of thousands of dollars if the market genuinely crashes. So it's a wild, wild ass bet, but it's a bet. But you know, again, I'm telling you, Adam, don't follow my investment advice. I'm not a good investment advisor. Adam, thanks for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today with the Talk Media News service today. With this report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do, available in your local bookstore and all the usual suspects places. And on the line with us, Ellen Ratner herself. Hey, Ellen, what's going on in the world today?
It's not too late to purchase a goat for somebody for the holidays, for
there
Christmas
you go.
Or for Hanukkah or whatever.
Yep.
And you get a certificate right away, and we're the only animal group that gives people a photograph with the animal and the recipient, and we only give out lady goats because they don't get eaten and they give out milk.
There you go.
GoatsForTheOldGoat.com.
And this, so that's
this the advertisement. Okay. Yeah. Now, I want to warn all of your listeners, Tom, that the CIA, you think that you send something on one of those apps and it goes away and it will never be seen again? Well, guess what? One of the apps was actually invented by the CIA, and everything you write on an app goes to the CIA. So you have to be extremely careful.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about things like instant messenger? You know,
yeah, exactly. All of those.
Wow.
So we also know that, for instance,
how did we find this out, Ellen?
Well, I heard from somebody in the CIA.
Whoa. Okay.
They invented a particular one, which I'm not going to talk about on the air, but right. I will tell you, just be careful of all of them. And we do know, for instance, there was an FBI agent who texted his partner, girlfriend or whatever at that time, who was an FBI attorney. 90 pages of their text messages are now in front of the House committee.
Wow, and that's just text messages. So that's just using...
Those are just text messages. I always tell our interns and our staff, don't text or put anything in email that you don't want on the front page of the Washington Post.
I guess not. Amazing. Okay, what else is up?
So we do know today there was testimony. We haven't yet heard what all the testimony was. This was before one of the House committees. It was a regular oversight committee, but it's the vice president of the, or vice chair, or vice whatever it is, of the Justice Department testifying about all of this. Okay, now let's talk about the more defeat yesterday, and as my brother said, it's an early Hanukkah present for all of us.
Yeah, there you go.
But what's fascinating about that is, first of all, more African Americans voted in yesterday's election than voted for Obama in 2012.
Which is amazing.
Which is amazing. So they were able to get out the vote. And what they're trying to say now, and the Democratic National Committee had a conference call this morning and all that kind of stuff, and what they're trying to say is, hey, this means we can win the 2018 elections. But remember, this was one state. It took all this energy. He only won against this guy, Doug Jones, by 1.5%,
right,
which is not much considering, in my view, we should have probably taken the whole thing given who Moore was and does.
Yeah, I'm guessing that the sexual allegations against Roy Moore probably pulled 5 to 10 points off his vote. So really that's what took him down. And the Democrats are not going to be so fortunate as to have accused, you know, child molesters on every single one of their ballots.
That's
it ain't going to
exactly
happen.
Exactly right. And even if they did have child molesters in every state in 2018 or in every congressional district, the problem is they don't have the personnel or the money to put up a fight in every one of these districts.
Right.
Now, some of the districts are, you know, reliable Republican and they don't care, and some are reliably Democrat and they don't care. So you know, maybe you have 30, 40 districts that really matter, but you have a few Democratic senators and states that actually matter as well.
Yeah, so the take-home message is don't get too cocky about this. This, you know, we still need to do the hard work. We still need people to get inside the Democratic Party and you know, good candidates to be volunteering to run, particularly women right now, particularly people of color. This is a great time for you know, to reinvent the Democratic Party. Back to you, Ellen.
Right. Okay. So the other thing that I heard from our mutual friend, former Congressman Bob Ney, who I know gets on the air with you as well, is that he's very concerned that on December 12th, the Congress could have re-upped their concerns or whatever about Iran, and they let it go. And he says it's a lot of bluster and a lot of noise, but they're really not doing anything, even though the White House says, oh, well, the Iran deal is very bad. But the House and Senate, which has to really approve of it, hasn't done anything on it.
Well, you know what the intelligence services are saying is that every time the president or Republican members of Congress attack the Iranian nuclear deal, they are diminishing the possibility of a successful nuclear deal with North Korea. Because North Korea is looking at this going, yeah, the United States gave their word. They promised. They signed the agreement. And now they're reneging on it. Why should we cut a deal with them?
Well, that's exactly right. And the problem is people don't trust the United States anymore.
At least for the last year, yeah. And that's tragic.
So that's a very big one. Now, there's a couple other quick things, but the famous Omarosa from the Apprentice plans to leave the White House next month, but we don't know why.
Trump,
we have to wait for a leak on that.
Trump is losing his black friend.
Yes, and the person that supposedly supported him completely and totally.
Right. She was his liaison to the African-American community. I wonder if it has to do with Roy Moore's loss in Alabama.
Well, we really don't know.
Yeah.
By the way, when the vice president or vice chair of the Justice Department spoke today to the House committee, he said there was no good cause to fire Mueller. So he's not taking the fire Mueller cause up in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, this is Rod Rosenstein, right?
That's right.
Number two guy in the Justice Department. Yeah, I thought that was fascinating. His testimony didn't seem to produce any blockbusters or bombshells. It seems
Of course not, because there is no blockbusters. I mean, aside from the fact that the CIA was able to get 90 pages
of text messages,
which is really quite unbelievable. Also,
yeah.
Now this is pretty interesting. As you know, Christine Gillibrand is the senator from New York, and as you know, she was on the Today Show this morning.
Yeah. Ellen, I'm sorry, we're out of time.
Okay, I didn't hear it.
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm sorry. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.